Hey, welcome to the Keep It Cute Show. I'm Dakia.
And I'm Sabrina. And today we are going to talk about a legendary throwback party.
Throwback Thursday is Thursday.
Right? And we are going to talk about Freak Nick. And there was a recent documentary that came out. It was highly anticipated. It was controversial. But the documentary really highlights like this legendary street party, the party of all street parties that ran through like the 80s and most of the 90s too. Yeah. And so like we were a little too young to participate in that.
A little too young.
I was a child. I was a child when that was happening. But I remember hearing about it. I remember hearing about how epic it was and that it was something that was kind of like word of mouth.
Yeah.
Right? There was no social media or cell phones or anything like that to promote it. And it just grew and grew and grew over time. And it was really just kind of like, I keep on saying legendary because I felt like so much stemmed from that in terms of like just black culture. You know what I mean?
For the good and the bad.
For the good and the bad. Mm-hmm. So, but before we talk about what we saw in the documentary, let's talk a little bit about what was leading up to the documentary, because I was hyped so hyped that, you know, today I decided to wear like some bigger door knocker kind of earrings,
come
some
on.
Lip liner and all that, just
come
to bring it
bring
back
the 80s and 90s realness,
just try to do a little something for y'all. But I was really hyped about it, but not everybody was hyped about it coming out, particularly some of the people who had participated.
Right, like you said, I was excited about it too, but I was nervous for those people. It was like, what are they gonna show? What are they gonna expose? Is somebody's mama gonna be, you know, coochie popping in a handstand? Like, what is going on? Like, what are they going to show? But I don't know, we'll get into it when we talk about what we saw in the episode, I mean in the documentary. But it showed a lot, but it didn't show as much as I thought it was going to show,
which was a good call. And I think that because when the documentary was announced, there was some immediate, like, why are you guys bringing this to the surface? Like, you know, that was a different time. I was much younger. There were particularly, like, a group of women who came out and was trying to get it stopped because they were worried about, you know, what was going to be shown and how you know, they're going to get called out, I guess. You know what I'm saying?
They tried to shut it down.
Some of the debauchery that they had participated in. And so they were trying to shut it down, honestly. I'm glad that they didn't.
Right.
And social media, you know, read them. Like, are we even going to recognize you from that long ago?
Can you imagine, though, if they did show it and you didn't see your mama?
Let me be very clear. I told Walter, I was like, I better not see you on that damn thing. Because he is old enough. He did go. Walter went a few years.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so I was like, I better not see your ass.
That's hilarious. So like you said, we were too young. I do know other people that have gone besides Walter. It stopped in 1999. And in full transparency, I graduated from high school in 1999. And so if it would have lasted another year, I don't think I would have gone. Only because I would have gone to the 80s version.
Yeah.
I would have not have gone to the 90s version of what it turned into.
Yeah, yeah. I would say that just seeing, some of the things that transpired is like, I don't think I... But if it was one of those things where I was like old enough to have gone during like the late 80s, early 90s, I would have been there.
Absolutely.
I would have been there.
So back in the 80s version of it, it actually got started from people from my hometown right here in Washington, D.C.
Of course.
D.C. is going to start something like
that. Of course D.C. goes start something black. Right. They'd be like, this is some black stuff right here for us.
Y'all
exactly.
Good for that. We're gonna bring DC
wherever
we go. So some students from the HBCUs in Atlanta that were from DC started this black spring break because a lot of people didn't have the money to go home for spring break. Like spring break came, they had the money to make it back home, get an airplane ticket or rent a car to get back home. So they were like, let's throw a picnic to just give people something to do while we're here on spring break.
Some community,
some good times, some food, some fun, and let's just have a good time for spring break, you know? Let's just do it here. A lot of other people go places. They got Daytona, they got this and that. Let's just have a good picnic for us. And it started off great.
Yeah, let's create something for black people, right? Mm-hmm. And I just love that, you know, it's just so symbolic of black people, right? That something that came out of like, okay, people are struggling to make it home because of the cost or whatever like that, like that they flipped that on its head and made it an opportunity,
right?
Like instead of thinking about like, oh, these people, and like they flipped it on its head and were like, you know what? We all can't make it home right now because this shit is expensive. So let's do something among ourselves. And what is that quote? Like, necessity is the father of invention. And I just feel like black people are just leaders in that. Like we never let our circumstance hold us back. And I feel like the root roots of the Freaknik is definitely symbolic of that. So, you know, shout out to the founders. Mm-hmm. I just love that they seized the opportunity.
Yes, mm-hmm. yes. And so back then it was like everybody was kind of representing their city. They had DC Club. Mm-hmm. They had the Philly Club, the Pennsylvania Club, because mm-hmm. you had to include Pittsburgh. Shout out to Pittsburgh. Mm-hmm. But so, yeah, their group, their club of students from these various HBCUs started it. And I think that, like you said, it really showcased you know, the vibrancy and the depth of culture and Black culture and the experience and the and how much we can influence things. Mm-hmm. And I think that when it started, I think that that really put Atlanta on the map for its creativity and music and style and things mm-hmm. like that, too.
Yeah, I definitely think, you know, Atlanta has always been like a historically very, very relevant place in Black culture. But I really feel like the Freaknik is something that was just like a huge moment in time for that city in terms of just how it evolved. And I don't know, I just feel like it kind of took it into like, you know, a new mm-hmm. century almost in terms of its like relevance. Neither one of us went to a HBCU. Right. We both went to PWIs.
Yep.
Every time I see something like a Freaknik documentary where you see like Black people coming together and carving out their space and creating something beautiful, it kind of makes me like, oh, I wish I would have went to an HBCU. Do you feel like that?
I definitely have moments when I wish I had that experience. However, I cannot negate the experience I had at University of Pittsburgh. Like, it really shaped
me. You're such a diehard.
I am. Shout out to Pitt, H2P. So I really believe that the experience that I had at Pitt is what I needed. For me, I grew up in Chocolate City. I grew up in D.C. I had all Black teachers. People have never had Black male teachers before. I had countless Black male teachers.
Yeah.
My entire time in school, I only had two white people in my schools.
Mm.
So I kind of wanted to see a different view. Mm-hmm. And I know a lot of people do go to HBCUs for that same reason. You know, they don't have that viewpoint and they want to experience the Black culture. I had already been immersed in it and it was like, maybe I want to just kind of see what else is out there besides, you know, the Ward 8 of D.C., you know?
Right.
So, but at the same time, I definitely miss, because our band and homecoming was nothing like the bands in the homecoming at HBCU. So I did miss out on that.
Yeah. In the opposite point where, like, you know, I didn't grow up in an all Black neighborhood. I grew up in a neighborhood where, like, Black people were a minority among Black people. It was very diverse. And so mm-hmm. there's some benefits of that, right? Where you're exposed to all these different cultures and you're used to navigating spaces that don't look like you as a Black person. Like, you have mm-hmm. to learn that very early in life. And I feel like that's a skill that, you know, is very natural to me because mm-hmm. of that. But I really feel like, damn, there's parts of like just being surrounded by your own and just having that like I missed out on. And mm-hmm. so not going to an HBCU, I feel like I have found that later in life mm-hmm. by moving to DC.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Well, like, we ain't quite Chocolate City now. We kind of like a latte.
It is true. But you know, the other day I met someone, I met a Black man who's an opera singer.
Hmm.
And I was like,
yeah, I know several. Yeah.
I was mm-hmm. like, only in DC am I going to meet some motherfucker.
Absolutely. You know absolutely.
What
I mean?
But that's what I love about this place. It don't matter what you're into, what niche you're going to find. You're going to find a Black community who has carved out a space for themselves,
mm-hmm.
like the students that did it in Atlanta. So that was cool.
Right.
Yeah, that was really cool.
So back to Freaknik, though. We talked about how it started and how, you know, it was a positive thing just to have a good time during spring break. Then it kind of switched. It kind of flipped on its head. And things started getting a little wild, a little crazy. People have kind of pointed a couple different reasons of why it would have got crazy. Like, number one is because Luke.
Yeah, Uncle Luke.
Uncle mm-hmm. Luke started mm-hmm. being a part of it, and he brought the debauchery. He brought that sexual deviancy there. And it kind of, like, changed the vibe. And then the uncles started coming, like the 30s and 40s.
Uncle Luke was like, he invited them out.
Exactly. So he invited the older people. Now the older guys are now at Freaknik partying with these college students, which is supposed to be a safe space for them, their spring break. Now you got 30s and 40-year-olds taking part in the Uncle Luke video mm-hmm. on the college spring break.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts on that?
I think that that is what it looked like from what the documentary like portrayed. I think that that's interesting, too, because that's essentially what Freaknik was. It was like a huge street party. It was a spring break destination for Black college students, and they were migrating from all over the country, mainly driving in, right? Because ain't nobody got money for no plane ticket, right? So people are like driving in, and then I think that somehow it shifted to being more just about like the broader Black community, you know what I'm saying? Like where other young Black adults wanted to like participate.
Yeah.
And then from there, it grew even more to like having like old heads out there. And I feel like it made me think about being a young woman and finally being able to get into the club, right? And so I remember like my earliest club experience is getting into like an 18 and up club, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like called City Nights, for those of you who know. I was like, and I remember thinking I was doing my thing being able to go to City Nights, right? And I remember being City Nights, fresh 18 year old, right? My first club experience. And there were like old men in there, like 30 year olds in there, 40 year olds in there, you know, looking out for fresh meat. Like I'm saying, like, and it made me think about that. It made me think of like, well, damn, if this happened to me in a club experience, you know what I'm saying? I can only imagine what it's like to have this huge street party with 18, 19, 20, 21 year olds. Yeah, there's going to be some
creepy old men in the club or on the street or in the picnic or whatever. It's crazy because I have those same memories of being in college, and it was like, you know, the old heads on campus. Like, you don't even go to college, you know, but why are you at the campus party? You know, that type of thing. So I can imagine that this once safe space of like mind, because, you know, when you're on a college campus, when you're with college people, there's some kind of sense of safety. There's kind of some kind of sense of, you know, we're all here at the same time. We're having this shared experience. But then when you kind of bring in the outside world and the outside community, it's like, oh, we not in our little safe little, you know, campus bubble anymore. We're off the quad now. We're in the streets. So I can imagine that shift between having the college student party to the old heads being creepy and taking it way too far and thinking that they're going to live out their Uncle Luke dreams and fantasies on these 21-year-olds. I can imagine how scary that was. And it got really scary for a lot of people. There were so many sexual assaults, so many like just, you know, ripping women's clothing off, like videotaping and just grabbing and pushing.
It's got too much.
Crazy.
You know, and that's unfortunate. And I think about that like, I thought the beauty of Freaknik was that, like, and even some of the women who participated were saying, you know, like, I can be here, I can be uninhibited, I could be myself, I could, you know, if I want to, you know, sit there and we call it twerk, I think they call it booty shaking or something like that, like, if I want to back it up or whatever, I can do that, and I'm just having a fun, playful time, you know what I'm saying? I don't have to worry about anything. But then it also kind of shows you that, like, that freedom for women is so, like, limited. Or it only has, like, you know, you can only do so much of that because then it's going to be taken advantage of.
Absolutely.
And I was like, that's the part that I hate. I hate that there was, like, this space where, you know, women were able to express themselves uninhibitedly. But, like, and then it became an unsafe space because of that.
Yeah,
you know what I'm saying? Exactly. And that sucked. Because, don't get me wrong, like, it didn't, I felt like, you know, the parking lot pipping, you know what I'm saying? People coming out with their cars. None of that was a problem.
Right.
Like, even Too Short, who is a self-proclaimed pimp, right, was like, my favorite moments were just seeing women walk up, drop it like it's hot, and keep it moving.
Right. You know what I'm saying?
He was like, that was his favorite. And, like, it was like, so if someone with that type of background, it was like, yo, it was just, you could see.
A good time.
You know, you could look and not touch. You could do whatever, you know what I'm saying? Like, and then for it to be taken to like an unsafe space where people are trying to grab and take advantage of and do all that, it was just like, show some restraint.
Yeah, some respect.
Yeah.
Like you said, I do appreciate that women's sexual liberation. I love that, you know, you had TLC, you had all these other artists at the time, Janet Jackson, just becoming a little bit more comfortable in their sexuality and being comfortable like expressing what they want. I am a sex positive kind of woman, you know what I mean? I think and believe that women should have the freedom to express their needs.
And Black women haven't really had that luxury,
right? Because we've been sexualized for so long,
and so we had like this countercultural reaction within our community where you had to be extremely, like, you know, conservative
and
because
restrained.
Of that, because of how sexualized we are. And so you saw that there was like this countercultural reaction, like, no, I'm gonna embrace my sexuality,
yeah,
and then you have this backlash again, exactly. And that was just like the real misfortunate part about it.
Exactly.
But I was like, you know, I was here for the Coochie Cutters and the Daisy
Dukes. The Daisy Dukes. Oh, they took the Daisy Dukes to another level. It was definitely the Coochie Cutters.
I was going to say, I was like, those Coochie Cutters then still ain't the Coochie Cutters of today.
Right.
The Coochie Cutters of today are ridiculous. Yeah,
touche.
They are ridiculous. I was like, goodness. So I was like, when looking at the fashion in that documentary, I was like, oh, it seems so like... So conservative in comparison to today's fashion.
That's a
fashion,
good point. You know what
I'm saying? I was like, them shorts ain't nearly as short as what I be seeing now.
Right. It's like the t-shirts and the tank tops and the shorts and stuff. I remember seeing like they had a couple girls had the denim shorts on, but I remember having those exact shorts when I was like 12. Yes. So it wasn't that bad. Like them denim, it was the colored denim shorts, like purple and pink denim shorts.
Yeah.
And they were that thick denim. Yeah. Like, they were tough.
There were no stretch.
There was no stretch whatsoever. They were not forgiving.
No stretch.
But yeah, it was like, you know, the fashion, at that time was risque, like, oh, you need to put some clothes on. Mm-hmm. But today we have become accustomed to
showing ass,
pasties,
showing ass. Mm-hmm. And I also liked the way that they called out that, like, back then, you know, well, even in terms of fashion, like, women's hair was always like, yo, it was laid. And you know, it was hot and humid in Atlanta during that time. You know.
Yes.
So they definitely had it laid to perfection. So yes. I was like, kudos to those women.
I can smell the hairspray through the TV. You know what I mean? Because I remember going to the hair salon and it being so hard, you can knock on it. You know what I mean? And I can imagine the way, like, just the hairspray in the air. Mm-hmm. but yeah. Yeah, you know, I think that...
And it was all natural bodies.
All natural bodies.
There wasn't... Like,
there were no BBLs.
Yeah, implants and all of that and injections. Like, none of that. It was just natural bodies. And that was celebrated. It was fine. Do you know what I mean?
I mean, the 80s and 90s beauties of Black women, like the face cards were so important. The face cards never declined. You know what I mean? And it was, like you said, the natural beauties, the natural booties, natural faces. You're just being a beautiful woman and not having to rely on your assets.
And I think it's so unfortunate because I feel like, you know, you and I were not old enough to have participated in that event, right? But the beauty standards that were promoted at that time were just so much more realistic and organic, right? And that's what we grew up watching, right? But I feel bad because, like, you know, the generation after us, those Gen Zers, is that what they are? I don't know what they are. Anyway, but, like, I feel like the generation after us, like, that's when, like, a lot more of that, like, plastic surgery and a lot of that altering your body became more and more and
filters
more normal
and all that stuff
like that. And it's just like, well, damn, I just feel bad for them because it's like they're chasing something that's not real.
Yeah.
You know? And that's something else that made me think about it. Like, damn.
And that's a social media thing because people are trying to be those perfect selves from social media. Thank God they didn't have social media back in these days. I know. I had my fun in college. I didn't have quite this much fun, but I am happy that we didn't have social media when I was in college. So I can only imagine how these people at Freaknik are happy. But then, like, after all that, you know, positivity to start with it, and then it got a little reckless and dangerous, and then the city just... He was trying to shut it down, you know, and I saw that, you know, they would shut down all the exits to get into Atlanta. Like, people were just stuck on the highway.
And that almost made me feel like it created a pressure cooker situation. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Where you had people who probably had gone for years.
Yeah.
Right. And they're accustomed to a certain level of, like, mobility and just freedom. And then they're constrained. I'm almost wondering if that really contributed to, like, how unsafe it was in the remaining years. Do you know what I mean? Because you're cramming people into a very small space where they usually wouldn't have been, you know?
Exactly.
So it's almost like they created a pressure cooker situation in that sense. I also thought it was really interesting how much, the economics really fueled that, right? Like, they had gotten the bid to be, you know, the host of the Olympics.
Yes.
And, like, anyone who knows that, like, when a city becomes the host for the Olympics, they start setting up shop for the Olympics. And typically that's in Black and brown neighborhoods, right? Like, that's who's getting displaced. That's who's getting. And so it's just interesting to me that, like, once for a long time, Freaknik was probably, like, a revenue generator for the city, right? Like, it had been there. These students need to stay somewhere. They need to eat somewhere, you know, all those stuff. And so it's like, it was good at some point, but then it was like, nah, we're going to go ahead and we're going to cater to the world down. There's no more space for you.
Right.
And that was really fucked up.
Yeah, I definitely think that the Olympics played a huge part in it. But also, I think that when Black people have that kind of fun, you know, we're reckless. We're wild animals. It's beast and this and that. And a lot of the white neighbors and people in the community were trying to shut it down. But at the same time, the white kids at Daytona Beach were doing even the same, if not worse, than what was going on at Freaknik. I remember those MTV spring break weekends. Girl. And I was, again, too young.
With t-shirt contests and all that. Yes, girl.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. You know, passing women through the crowd, mosh pits and, you know, beer headstands. I mean, keg stands and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. I know for a fact, just from what they would air on MTV, which already had censorship, if they could show that on MTV, who, you know, that they were really getting down on Daytona Beach.
It's a spring break. That's what people do. They go wild. They go crazy. Mm-hmm. I just felt like, you know, and another thing that came to mind as I was watching it was like, how much of this, like, so once they got the Atlanta bid, right? Mm-hmm. How much of the misfortunate acts that happened in a space like that, how much of that was sensationalized as an excuse to shut it down. Do you know what I mean?
I mean, I think that's a fine line, though, sis.
And I'm going to say, any amount of rape, harassment, you know, none of that is allowed, right? Or acceptable.
One is too many.
Yeah, one is too many. But it almost made me feel like they magnified that as a way of saying, like, hey, this is a real issue. This is the reason why we're shutting it down, when it really wasn't the reason. Do you know what I mean? And I feel like, but I say that in saying that there were women who testified that they felt the difference in the experience, you know, and that's why they stopped going too. Yeah. So I don't want to make it seem like there wasn't that shift, but I almost felt like, instead of, you know, maybe having police there to help be, you know, not in like a military presence on horses with, like, you know,
but some security.
But some security. Instead of being like, okay, we need to actually have some security. Y'all just can't be out here just flowing throughout the city on your own. We're actually going to have to make sure that there's some type of, you know, safety that's insured. They just magnified it to, like, shut it down.
Yeah, I think it's a combination of both. I think that both things can be true. I definitely think that there was some absolutely horrific things happening. I mean, we've seen footage, not on this documentary, but on Twitter or, you know, just through passing videos and stuff like that. So we know that it was some treachery happening, and a lot of women were traumatized, you know. Like, I can't imagine being in a sea of men all around me just literally ripping my clothes off, you know. Like, a lot of crazy things happened. But at the same time, like you said, I think that a lot of it was magnified. I mean, I don't know. Like, part of me is like, it needs to be magnified. Like, we need to shut that down if that's what's going to happen. But like you said, to the point of adding security, that could have been the first step. But
I think it was like, it was the magnification and also the response, right? Like, because there are things that happen in these white spaces all the time. True. You can't tell me people aren't getting groped, violated, raped, and, you know, ODing, alcohol poisoning. You can't tell me that these things aren't happening in the white spaces, but that's not getting shut down.
You're right.
You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. It's they're taking precautions to try to, you know, better control it, or to try to ensure some type of safety. Whereas I felt like, in Atlanta, it almost felt like they took these extreme measures.
Absolutely. Right?
Because it was Black people.
Absolutely. I 100% agree with you on that. You know, and so it was because it was Black people, and because the Olympics were coming.
Yes.
And they had to show, see, we can be tough on crime.
We can get these Black people in line.
Yeah, we can manage these crowds, and you know, we could be tough on the crime, and we can handle these large events and things like that. But no, it was a little aggressive the way that they handled that. It definitely could have been shut down a better way.
Yeah, I think so. It could have been shut down a better way. It wouldn't have been the same, but I think that the way that they dealt with it was way too extreme, and that's the reason why some of the misfortunate acts or unfortunate acts just kind of like proliferated. I also think it was interesting that, like, so many OGs, man, were in the documentary talking about the good old times. That was kind of nice to see. Do you know what I mean? And you realize how much of, like, Black culture has really been driven by some of the things that took place at Freaknik. So it's kind of good to see that.
I think that our music was definitely driven by Freaknik because all of those Atlanta artists were pushing their cassette tapes. Let's take that back there. They were pushing their cassette tapes and mixtapes to the kids that were waiting on the highway. You know what I mean? And all those parties, they were playing, like they had their street teams out there delivering Outkast and all the ATL artists. And all those kids were from across the country. So they would take those Atlanta mixtapes that they got at Freaknik and take them back home. And I think that that's when Atlanta became a mecca of Black music. And as we know, Black music shapes American culture.
Right.
World culture.
Right. Right. Mm-hmm. So it was really nice to see the recount of that.
Yeah.
I also thought it was really interesting that there have been, and I didn't realize that there have been attempts to like revive Freaknik in a very different way. Mm-hmm. But it's kind of giving like, you know, when they try to reboot movies and TV shows from our childhood, it's like, no, y'all, it's just, y'all not doing it. Y'all doing it a disservice, honestly, trying to remake it.
I ain't gonna lie. Well, the first person I saw in that documentary was 21 Savage. I was like, why is 21 Savage?
Yo, I was really surprised that he was so passionate about
it. Because he was one of those revivers. He was trying to revive Freaknik. And I was like, bro, I thought you don't even have like, he ain't from here, right?
That's what I thought. I was like, isn't he from like the UK or something?
He's from, he ain't from here, but I think he grew up, he ended up coming here and going to school in Atlanta. But at the same time, I was like, you definitely were not old enough to go to Freaknik, and you, were you even in the United States at the time? But
I kind of felt like, oh, don't get me wrong, I'm one of those people who was like, damn it, I would have loved to have been in Freaknik. You know what I'm saying? Like, I feel you, 21, but I also kind of feel like, huh, that was interesting. I just feel like Freaknik, it can never be what it was because it was such a special moment in time, and there were so many circumstances that led to that, just where we were at as a country, as a culture, things like that. But I just felt like, yeah, it's giving, you know, knockoff reboot vibes.
Yeah, don't do it. Don't bring it back. Mm-hmm. I mean, we had something kind of similar. We had Black Greek Weekend in Philly back in the day. But that's pretty much the closest thing to Freaknik that we've had. But yeah, I don't think that, I know the dude got the trademark, he holds the trademark for Freaknik, but they tried to bring it back in 2019. I don't even remember if it really took off or not.
I didn't even hear about it.
Yeah. And then the pandemic happened, so I don't think they've tried it again. But they need to just let it die.
Yeah.
And let's move on to the next thing.
How about you create a Freaknik like museum or something? I don't know.
Right. Let's put the bamboo earrings, the coochie cutters.
Like, let's do another way of commemorating this thing.
The cassette tapes, all of that stuff in a museum.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But overall, I enjoyed the documentary.
I think that it showed a lot, but it didn't really give as much as I thought it was going to.
In what way? What were you hoping it would give?
I think that it kind of glossed over some of the bad stuff.
See, in my mind, I was happy that they didn't harp too much on that, because I was like, I felt like it was so much more than the bad stuff.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I agree. I'm happy that it didn't harp on it. But at the same time, it was just kind of like, oh, we had one or two incidents. It was hundreds of incidents. So I thought that I'm happy that didn't expose anyone. You know, let me be clear about that. I'm happy that, you know, if your mama was in a compromising position in this documentary, they did blur her face out. But at the same time, I thought that it didn't quite get as in-depth as I was anticipating. I think it was because it had so much excitement leading up to it. I thought they were going to really, like, kind of go in. But at the same time, I'm happy they didn't expose, like, a particular person or that. But I don't want us to gloss over how many women had such horrible experiences.
I mean, they had, like, survivor testimonies. Yeah. I felt like, honestly, the documentary took a turn to where I was like, oh, shit, this is heavy.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I guess I feel differently. I felt like they did do it justice, and I think that too often, I just didn't want that to be the entire legacy.
True.
You know what I mean? And I felt like if they would have gone deeper, it would have portrayed that as like the lasting legacy. Mm-hmm. And I was actually happy that so much of the documentary talked about like the early days and the founding of Freaknik.
I was excited about that.
I was like, this is the thing that I want people to take away from it, that can be something beautiful that comes to from coming together and building space.
Mm-hmm.
But there are also some lessons learned around that too.
Yeah. I had no idea DC started it, but of course, I mean.
I love the way you claim that. You're like, DC started it.
Of course.
DC started it.
It's given Washingtonian.
And DC started it.
Absolutely. But yeah, if you haven't checked it out, check out Freak Nick, the greatest, what is it called? The Greatest Party Never Told, on Hulu. Mm-hmm. Check it out now.
It was really good. Mm-hmm. It was good. Are you ready for game time?
I am always ready for some game time, sis.
Let's do it. Let's do it. Okay, so today we are going to do this or that.
Okay.
Or one's got to go, whichever way you want that. And it's going to be rapid fire.
Rapid fire.
Do you want to kick us off?
I'll kick us off.
Okay, right. Let's do it.
Are you ready?
Yes. Okay. Wait, hold on. Let me take
a sip. Okay, take a sip. Okay. Mm-hmm. You ain't got to threaten me with a good time. Let's go.
Okay.
Go. All right. Dollar Tree or Family Dollar?
Dollar Tree.
Oh, why? Okay.
Because it's truly a dollar. Right? I hate going into Family Dollar and be like, this is $5, $10. I was like, what kind of dollar store is this? I want it to be a dollar.
Okay. There. Yeah. Sedan or SUV?
SUV.
Really? But like, you got a sedan.
I know, but I grew up, I learned how to drive a car in an SUV. Mm. And you know, I'm little, so I like to sit up high and see everything.
Yeah,
you know
what I'm saying? I have a sedan, but my next car is going to be SUV.
Yeah, I want an SUV. I want to sit up above everyone. I want to feel like if you hit me, I'm not going to go off spiraling. You know what I'm saying? Like that type of thing.
Okay. Red wine or white wine? I mean, I know what we're sipping, but.
Well, I prefer white wine. I do.
Okay.
I do. I just feel like it's refreshing. Sometimes red wine makes me sleepy.
Oh, okay. Summertime, I'm definitely going with white, but yeah. If I have my choice, I'm going with a cab.
Yeah, seasonally, I'm going to try to keep it red if I have to. Yeah.
Okay. Lobster or shrimp?
Shrimp.
Okay.
I don't know, I just think that there's like so much more you can do with shrimp. And yeah. It's, you know, yeah.
On a regular basis, I'm definitely shrimp, but yeah. The fancy, like, give me some lobster. Yeah. I'm fancy. Double Dutch or hopscotch?
Definitely hopscotch.
Can you double dutch?
No.
Okay.
And that's why I had to say hopscotch. Okay, okay. I don't know when to jump in and when to do all that. Okay. I'm gonna be honest with y'all. They were like, Sabrina, you turning doubles right now. I'm like, okay, let me step back.
You're saying
like,
you being double handed. Okay. Right.
I was like, you know, I couldn't. So yeah, no, it's a hopscotch for me. But I was good at some hopscotch. Let me tell you now.
I could
like jump over and you know in the line and you know
what? Yeah, okay. Okay. Mm-hmm. Angela Yee or Just Hilarious?
You know what? I loved Angela Yee's journalism.
Okay.
Because I think she really brought some journalism to it. But Just Hilarious is just funny.
Okay. So I'm and she's from Baltimore, up the street.
So I'm going to choose Just Hilarious.
Okay. Ooh, Candace Owens or Omarosa?
Neither. Throw them both away.
Both of them got to go.
Throw them both away.
Both of them got to go. Away.
I can't even choose between that.
Okay, we talked about
am I supposed to sip?
Yes. Take a sip for that one. Mm-hmm. All right. We kind of talked about this in a previous episode, but do you want to be ghosted or confronted?
I want to be confronted as an adult. You know what I'm saying? Yes. Like, I want you to be able to use your words and for us to have a grown-ass conversation. And at the end of it, we can both say, you know what, let's agree to disagree.
Yeah.
Or, you know, we should no longer be friends. Or let's let it breathe. Whatever, fill in the blank. But, like, a grown conversation.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe not confronted, but conversation? Whatever.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying?
Okay.
Okay.
All right, your turn.
Oh, my turn? Okay. Yeah. Okay. Well, speaking of which, Houston or Atlanta?
I've never been to Houston. I want to go to Houston. I have actual friends in Houston.
You never been to Houston?
I've never been to Texas.
What?
We gotta go.
Well, you ain't missing a whole lot. You're just missing a few places. Let me be very clear.
Right. Yeah, Houston.
Right. Exactly. Mm. I'll throw Galveston in there.
Okay.
That's like a little beachy area. It's kind of cool. Okay. Yeah. Austin's cool.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. So I'm going to go with Atlanta because I've been to Atlanta. And shout out, we were just talking about it with Freak Nick. Mm-hmm. But I do want to visit Houston.
We need to do a girls trip to Texas or Houston. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Spirit Airlines or Frontier Airlines?
Neither. Let me just drink.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
You know I'm bougie.
Mm-hmm. I know. I was like, I couldn't wait to see what you said.
You know I'm bougie.
Girl, I'm right now. I'm like, can I do this? Can I get on Frontier? I don't think I can.
I'm not.
I don't think I can, Sabrina. I don't think you can do it.
I'm not going.
You know, exactly. Zeus or Tubi?
I'm drinking again. I ain't watching either one of those.
Really?
I have not seen anything on a Zeus or Tubi.
Tubi got all the good black films, C level black films. When the camera be shaking and you know, you can see the mics and the.
I'm not entertained.
Hamilton or MJ the musical?
Ooh, you know I'm a theater buff.
I ain't seen either one of these. So
you haven't seen either one?
I know.
But Hamilton is on Disney Plus.
It's such a shameful secret. I don't like musicals. I know. People are always like, Sabrina. And I'm like, I hate people who bust out into song for no reason.
Oh, you lucky I did not get blessed with the gift of voice because I would be a walking musical if I could sing.
Oh, I live with someone like that. I live as I was constantly singing.
I'm gonna go with Hamilton.
Okay.
But I loved MJ the musical. It was so good. The dancing was amazing. The performance was amazing. But I just love me some Hamilton.
Yeah, that was for y'all theater. Yeah.
Oh, my
musical
gosh.
Folks. I like theater. I don't like musicals. But for y'all musical folks, y'all really was like hyping up Hamilton like on another level.
I've seen it several times.
Okay. Who wore it best?
Okay.
Beyonce's braids or Erykah Badu braids?
I love me some Erykah Badu, but she need to chill. Beyonce, you know I'm a beehive. Remember? Oh, you're a beehive.
I was going to say Erykah Badu. Let's keep it like, you know what I'm saying?
But it's not like it's hers. Beyonce been wearing braids since Lemonade, since before then.
I have no problem with Beyonce wearing braids. I like it, whatever, whatever. I just feel like it's true to who Erykah Badu is. It just seems like a little bit more part of her brand. I'm like, let's give respect to where it's due. Braids is Erykah Badu. Braids ain't Beyonce.
Erykah was wearing her head wraps. So I'm going to go with Beyonce.
And underneath was braids.
But underneath Beyonce's weave is braids, so
okay, touche. Okay. Being a sister wife or having an open marriage?
Ooh, not the sister wives and the open marriage. I'm gonna go with open marriage.
Okay, I was gonna say sister wife.
Really?
Yeah, girl, you help clean this shit up.
Shared responsibility.
You help raise these kids.
Okay.
You help have sex with him when I don't want to. You
I wouldn't want to know who it is, though. That's why I say open marriage and keep it over there. I don't want to know.
Yeah, I guess for me, I'm like, yeah, go to her room or go to her house tonight. Like,
yeah, I don't want it in my face. Saying?
Okay. Mm-mm. But
I'm number one.
I'm number one, to be very clear about that. Okay. Kevin Samuels or Dr. Umar?
Let me just keep sipping because I don't need one of them either. All your questions you are giving me, I am not choosing. Mm-mm.
Okay. Cheetah print or tiger print?
Ooh. Okay.
Stumped you. That's the one that stumped you. out of everything I said.
I mean, since I have some natural tiger stripes, I'm going to go with cheetah print.
I did not think that's where that was going. I didn't see that was going at all. All right, y'all. We're going to end it there. Thank you so much for tuning in.
Absolutely.
It's been so much fun. It's been so much fun. Make sure you like or subscribe. Mm-hmm. And please join us again on Thursdays at 8 p.m.
Make sure you keep it cute.
All right.
Bye.
Bye.